Alicia.
And I'm Mizuki.
And this is Plus 81.
To go into today's episode, first we want to thank everybody who answered our questions on Instagram. And I've also been getting really nice DMs about how people have been liking the episodes and what people want to hear more from us. So if you're interested in following us, our Instagram is at plus81, like plus81.pod, P-O-D. And if you have any requests for episodes, you can also DM us over there. So that was the Meguroku announcement saying, please refrain from going outside, with my dog howling to it. But yeah, we get those regularly now.
Yeah, so the state in Japan is getting worse by mm-hmm. the day.
Yep.
I was talking to my friend from California the other day, and mm-hmm. She told me that she thought Japan was doing a good job at containing the virus because a lot of the media from before was like, Japan has like a small number of cases mm-hmm. and deaths. And so I was like, no, not at all. It's so bad. And she was like, oh no. So we're still doing pretty bad. Numbers mm-hmm. are still rising quite drastically, I would say.
Yeah, right? Like just looking at the news today, like the actual specialists were like, we're predicting like 400,000 deaths like in total. Oh my God. So, you know, like actual people who know what they're saying are like, Tokyo is going to be the next New York. And
I 400,000?
Yeah.
400,000?
Is a number that's been quoted.
Isn't that the maximum that Trump was saying also?
I think in the US, the maximum was like 1 to 2 million.
Oh, so many?
Yeah, just for reference, 500,000 is how many US like people died in World War II.
Oh my God. I thought Trump was saying like 200,000 to 400,000.
Yeah, and then they did like a bunch of like lockdown measures and stuff. And then they were like, okay, maybe it's going to be more like somewhere in the 100,000s.
Oh my. But if we get 400,000, that's like yabai.
Yeah, but yeah, 400,000.
No one was supposed to die. We could have saved everyone.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I was watching Train to Busan the other day, and there's a scene where there's this really bad corporate dude who's like a CEO or something, and he like doesn't care about people, so he like only is trying to save himself. And the main character, after like a few people die because of the CEO guy, is like, we could have saved everyone. And that's how I feel right now. Like, no one was supposed to die. Like, we could have saved everyone.
Yeah.
But
like, Japan was like the luckiest country in the world. Like, they saw literally everybody trip on the same step. And then now we're tripping on the same step too.
Yeah, literally Diamond Princess was our calling and we didn't do anything. But anyway, do you want to say the number of cases?
So yeah, I'll just give a timestamp. It is 6:10 p.m. on April 15th, Wednesday, right now. And the latest numbers that we found are the total cases in Japan are 8,100 and total deaths are 119. The total new cases yesterday was 457 and new deaths was 10. Yeah, I think we should talk about the Tokyo numbers. So yes, the total new cases yesterday was 161 cases, which brings the total to 2,319. And then total deaths are 47, so almost 50 deaths so far. So almost half of Japan's deaths have been in Tokyo. I mean, well, one, because like most of the cases are in Tokyo most of the deaths are in Tokyo, and also because it is like the biggest population hub.
Yeah, so the state of emergency, what happened with that?
So I think if you're in Japan, everyone knows the state of emergency was announced on April 7th for 7 prefectures, which were Tokyo, Kanagawa, Saitama, Chiba, Osaka, Hyogo, and Fukuoka. So most of these are prefectures that surround Tokyo. So a lot of the people who live in those prefectures come to Tokyo to work. So from this, we can tell that they're obviously targeting clusters. And targeting clusters has been kind of the Japanese strategy for the coronavirus. And what was surprising for a lot of people was that, well, A, like Hokkaido is not included in the state of emergency. And also Nagoya was also not included in the state of emergency. Yeah, so yeah, Aichiken was also not included in the state of emergency, although Aichiken did declare themselves to be in a state of emergency.
Right, because they had a lot of cases there too.
Yeah, so yeah, it's still kind of a mystery why, Aichi wasn't declared.
Actually, I think it's because, so the reason why Aichi wasn't declared is because a lot of the cases in Aichiken were not centered in the cities. They were more towards like Inaka. Like, so because they weren't focused on the cities, they didn't consider it a cluster. But still, it's in the Ken. So it's like, you know, you have a lot of cases in the Ken. So you should declare a state of emergency, regardless of not they're in the cities or not.
Yeah.
So the state of emergency was declared, but it wasn't national.
No. So yeah, so PM just declared it for these 7 prefectures, but he himself doesn't have any real like enforcing powers within the prefectures.
So what does this do? What does this state of emergency do then?
So basically it's just a declaration, really.
Oh.
I think it's just to kind of like affect like citizen morale. So it's the same as the whole like social distancing and like self-quarantine, like those kinds of phrases that were like pushed around in the US. So the state of emergency is like kind of like that, at least in Japan. Yeah, the Japanese state of emergency has like very little enforcing power.
I heard that it allows governors to do more things.
Yeah, so within the state of emergency, the governors are the ones that actually have power to make real decisions. Mm-hmm. So the governors of prefectures, including Tokyo, can request or order closures of facilities like schools or where many people gather, such as museums or movie theaters. They can also request the sourcing and delivery of certain like essential goods like masks or like medical equipment. And what I thought was really interesting is that governors actually have, and this is the thing that has like penalization qualities to it, is that they can order lands and buildings to be temporary medical facilities. So for example, they can take like a school or potentially even like a private home and make that a hospital or a medical facility, and order the storage of essential goods such as medicine as well. And if citizens were to refuse to consenting to these like medical facilities or to like store these goods, then they can be sentenced up to 6 months in jail, or they can be fined up to 300,000 yen or close to $3,000. So that's the only thing that citizens can really be penalized for.
Are the medical goods.
Or essential goods, such as medical goods. So again, like the wording is a bit vague here as well.
Yeah.
And we'll like see this coming up and up again. But the main issue with the state of emergency in Japan is that the language is so abstract that it doesn't actually hold water. In all the language that talks about the state of emergency, it talks about like yosei, which is kind of like a request, or a shiji, which is kind of like a strong request specifically from the governor. So a lot of the state of emergency relies on citizens' kind of goodwill or cooperation with the state, which luckily we have been seeing. But it does get a bit more complicated when it involves people's like livelihoods and businesses. Just to talk about Tokyo's case in particular, because that's where Mizuki and I are. So our governor, Koike-san, has requested to close educational facilities like universities or cram schools, driving schools, and other like sports or recreation facilities, other gathering places such as like gekijo, so like theaters. And they can also request to close commercial facilities other than department or shopping malls or home centers or supermarkets that provide daily essentials like food or, again, like medicine. And if facilities choose to stay open, then they have to at least like strive to keep social distance within their facility, which is, again, a bit difficult for smaller facilities, which is a lot of the facilities in Tokyo. So how useful will this be is, again, still up in the air. And the establishments that will remain open are places like hospitals and pharmacies, obviously, grocery stores. Things that I found interesting were like hotels and shared accommodation systems or short and long term like stay facilities.
Yeah, I thought that was weird too.
Well, I guess like it's if you're like a businessman, like to keep the economy going, they have to keep it open. I don't think that this was intentional, but a lot of like homeless people are now being put into hotels. And because they closed the internet cafes, there's like kind of like a, what's it called? Like a group of people called Netto Cafe Nanmin, so internet cafe refugees, who are essentially homeless because all the internet cafes have closed. So a lot of non-governmental organizations are helping those people find hotel rooms. So for those kinds of uses, having the hotels open was useful, but I don't think that that was like the intent behind Koike's like strategy.
Because I mean, no one is supposed to be going on vacation right now.
Yeah, so I think that's, hotels are seen still as an, like, an essential facility. Food facilities have been kind of, like, a controversial topic, like, food / like, nighttime entertainment facilities, so things like restaurants or izakaya. Yeah. So restaurants are still considered kind of, like, a essential infrastructure to everyday life, same as, like, grocery stores. So those are open, and at first, izakayas were thought to... people thought that izakayas wouldn't be allowed to stay open, but those were allowed to stay open as well, but they have to close by 8. So, you know, if you think about what time you usually go to izakaya, you usually stay a lot later than 8. Right.
And usually people don't even go until even later.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that for the restaurants and stuff, the governor, again, requested that they be open from, what is it, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. So around those times you can be open, but from then you can't be open.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're serving alcohol at your restaurant, you can only serve alcohol until 7 p.m. to prevent people from staying any longer. But like you said, for the izakaya, a lot of their customers don't show up to their restaurants until much later in the evening. And almost like half of their revenue comes from serving alcohol. So that's like a really big strain on them.
Yeah. And we'll talk a bit more about this when we talk about the financial assistance. But basically, by not taking responsibility, by not forcing these establishments to close, the government doesn't need to take responsibility for whether or not they tank. So it is in the interest of the government to keep these places open, despite preaching 80% reduction in interaction.
Yeah, just like very hypocritical, because they're asking restaurants to stay open to save the economy, but then they're saying stay home to everyone else. So it's like, who's going to go to these restaurants if everyone's supposed to stay home, you know?
And I saw on like Twitter too, like a video of just like these police with like batons patrolling.
Oh my Kabukicho. God, yeah, that was so scary.
Nah.
Did you talk about the nightclubs, bars and nightclubs?
Yeah, basically play, like, quote-unquote play facilities, like bars, nightclubs, applause for closing pachinko, and other places like karaoke and game centers are also asked to close down, since there have actually been clusters at karaoke. And quite a few, like, middle-aged people were quoted saying that they didn't feel like the corona situation was serious because places like pachinko remained open.
So the reason why the bars and nightclubs are closed but the restaurants are open is because some of the first cases in Tokyo were when they tried to find where the virus came from. They found that some of these people had gone to these bars and nightclubs, and that's where they think they got the virus from. And so that's why they first closed the bars and nightclubs. But the reasoning for not closing the restaurants was because there's no confirmed case where they can see that it came from them going to a restaurant.
Right.
Which is, they're like, that you can get it from, you can get it anywhere.
Yeah.
Just because it didn't come from a restaurant, or like you can't trace it to restaurants, doesn't mean you shouldn't not close them.
Yeah. And they could have gotten it from like the train on the way to or from the nightclub. Like, there's no way to prove it.
Yeah, for which facilities to close, they're only closing them after they know where they came from, which is, I think, too late. Yeah.
The PM and everybody else, I guess, wants to cut down interactions between people by 80%, but at the moment, they're only really able to achieve about 50 to 60%, so...
Right. So going off of the decision to not close restaurants all the way, at least in Tokyo, that decision was made together with the federal government and the Tokyo governor together. Mm-hmm. Because at first, the Tokyo governor had stricter measures, I think, for restaurants to close. But after she declared her state of emergency, the federal government was like, your laws are, or your policies are too strict, even though they're not. Like, yeah. They're not doing anything. And also, it was just like a request. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they can penalize the restaurants for not staying closed.
Yeah.
So it took a while for the Tokyo governor to come up with like the details of the state of emergency after she declared it. And that was because there was some clash between federal and the Tokyo government, which is a theme we've been seeing a lot with the coronavirus. And also, like, with that, the Tokyo governor initially had, like, these depachika open, which are, like, kind of grocery stores-ish places in department stores, usually, like, in the basement of the department stores. Mm-hmm. And I think she had them closed. Actually, I don't know why she had them closed at first, but you know why?
Yeah, so they all, like, for example, like Takashimaya or like Mitsukoshi, like those are, their predominant business is like commercial, like selling clothes or like selling makeup, accessories, things like that. And the depachika, like the grocery store element of it, is kind of like tacked on at the end. It's not like their main revenue source. So they are like classified as like a commercial establishment, not really like a food or a grocery store establishment. They all kind of closed down kind of as, you know, like as dutiful citizens do. Yeah, that's really the reason why they closed.
But then the federal government was like, what are you doing? Like, you have to open up your grocery stores because people still shop at them.
I think it's like their argument was because those depachika are sometimes like connected to like train stations or like to major hubs of like transportation, it like a lot of people rely on them because it's like an easy way of getting food. But that's also just encouraging a cluster.
Yeah, but also like who lives next to a depachika?
Like, yeah, like it's like if you live in Ginza, if you live in like an expensive luxury neighborhood, you probably have like a depachika near you. But like to the average Japanese person, they don't have a depachika.
Yeah, you're gonna go to a regular grocery store. So so that was one of the things that happened. And the reason why I think this is happening is because the coronavirus response in the federal government is headed by this dude called Nishimura, who is on a regular basis, he is the minister in charge of economic revitalization, which tells you that the federal government is looking at this epidemic as an economic issue more than a health issue.
Yeah.
So this daijin is obviously going to go favor the economic crisis more than the health crisis that it should be.
And like we talked about before, like because Japan doesn't really have like a real CDC, I think that they're kind of having trouble figuring out who from like the health side they really should be putting in charge.
And I also know that other prefectural and even municipal governments also are going kind of against the federal state of emergency, right?
Yeah, so yeah, Aichi and Hokkaido have also on their own decided to declare themselves to be in a state of emergency.
Well, I know that Hokkaido closed their schools again.
Oh, yeah.
So this is Hokkaido's second state of emergency after their first wave of cases rising. So Hokkaido came out of the state of emergency recently, but now they've entered back into a state of emergency. But Hokkaido wasn't one of the seven prefectures that were on the federal government's list.
And I think like the confusion and the clashing comes from the fact that the state of emergency isn't well defined. So like a couple of the questions that we got was kind of like, how's Japan's state of emergency different from say like France or Spain or like other European countries or maybe like the US's state of emergency? So to like really figure this out, well, we have to go back to like the constitution. So for example, in the French constitution, they have exceptional powers to the president, which lasts for 12 days, but it can be extended. And they have specific acts for COVID-19 that was enacted this year, which allows a state of quote unquote health emergency to be declared in the event a health disaster that endangers its citizens or the health of its population. So basically, Article 16 of the French Constitution extends the power of the president, which allows for him to, for example, like really call for a lockdown. And in addition to that, they've had previous acts such as creating a state of siege, which has been enacted after like terrorist attacks, for example, after the Paris attacks. it basically, this year, they've written a new decree that expands the definition of a siege or a state of siege to include health emergencies. So they can create lockdowns that would happen, for example, a terrorist attack, for situations like this when there is a health, quote unquote, attack or crisis. However, with Japan, the post-1945 constitution was created by the GHQ. So it's heavily influenced by the US constitution that values, for example, like individual liberties, so on and so forth. So the power that it gives to the people is very, very strong in the Japanese constitution. But because that gives so much agency to its citizens, it's very hard for leaders such as the prime minister to exert power such as a lockdown over its citizens because of the constitution. There have been laws enacted in the past that extend some of the powers of the government or the prime minister. For example, some examples that were brought up were the 2012 law to fight the flu pandemic, but those were for novel diseases, which COVID-19 apparently is not a novel disease. So this doesn't apply. There have been no obvious examples of lockdowns in post-war Japan. However, there has been a quote-unquote restriction of free will after the 2011 disaster, when the government could forcibly remove citizens who lived near the nuclear plant. But that wasn't locking them down where they were. That was like forcibly removing them. And there are also laws such as the disaster management law that was enacted in 2011 that allows mayors to establish restricted areas. But again, this isn't locking down its citizens. It's just creating specific areas where only maybe special people can enter. For example, like firefighters, jietai, those types of people. But you're not quarantining people in their homes. Speaking of quarantining, Japan has had a pretty, like, I guess, darker history with people with diseases. So, for example, with leprosy, Japan used to quarantine people with leprosy and other diseases in like certain islands, or quarantine them in their homes, and those had real enforceable power. However, those laws were found unconstitutional in 2001 by one of the prefectures, and the government never appealed the decision, so it's just deemed to be unconstitutional. The LDP, so the current party in power, Abe's party, has tried to revise the constitution in 2012 to add a provision for a state of emergency that would involve like a foreign invasion or a domestic rebellion or a natural disaster, but it was never actually enacted. So although there have been like small tweaks here and there in different historical events, like a quote unquote state of emergency has never really been put into place until now. And even for this time state of emergency, Abe had to put in like a new law like a couple of weeks ago. That was, I think we talked about this in the last episode, but was really rushed through. So I guess to answer the question a lot simpler, the reason why Japan's state of emergency is so like wishy-washy is because there is no definition for it. There is no structure or steps to it.
It looks like there's no actual history of Japan enacting like a lockdown, whereas other countries such as France do have this history of kind of doing a lockdown.
So
Japan's state of emergency isn't a lockdown like in some European countries, but is there no way to like have a lockdown in a city?
Yeah, well, it depends on what you mean by a lockdown. If you mean like if you leave your house, like the police are gonna come like beat you, like that's never gonna happen. At least like not yet. But what they can do, like in a sense of like a lockdown, is to pay everybody so they stay home. And that's kind of the way that, for example, like America has been trying to enforce its lockdown, just pay everybody to stay home. I think places like Italy are also doing the same thing. I don't think you get like beat if you get go home. I mean, if you go outside.
So is the only way to have a lockdown to change the constitution, or is there, could they make laws?
Yeah, you definitely don't need to change the constitution, because the constitution doesn't say you can't have a lockdown. So you can definitely make laws that create scenarios where you could have a lockdown. For example, the disaster management law, they created scenarios where, yes, you can have an area that's just restricted to certain people. So they could do something similar with quarantining. For example, this company was found to have a person who was, you know, corona positive. So we're going to, quote unquote, like lock down the radius of that company, for example. I think that's totally doable. Like, however, Abe has been trying to use this like lack of ability to declare a quote unquote real state of emergency reason to change the constitution. But basically, like, he can't blame the constitution for like the crappy job that he's doing. Like, he could be doing so many other things right now. For example, paying us ahem. So yeah, changing the constitution is, you know, nobody wants that.
Like, I mean, yeah, the thing that worries me about this is that he will use this as an excuse, because one of his main policy goals is to change the constitution in a way that favors his basically like nationalistic mm-hmm. historical revisionist ideal.
Yeah.
Because he's been talking about constitutional reform for mm-hmm. for years now. Yeah. And so I'm afraid that he will use this as an excuse and like incite fear into people.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to know that you don't have to change the constitution to make special measures laws.
Yeah, like the constitution isn't the only law that governs the land. It's like one piece of it. So yeah, just to change something, you don't need to go all the way to the constitution. And I hope, I don't know, after watching Abe's like let them eat cake video, I hope people aren't like listening to him anymore.
It's so tone deaf. And everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? But yeah, what the hell is he doing? Like, he's not paying anyone, and he's like sitting in his like rich ass home, and he's like petting his like probably like pedigree dog.
It's hard to tell because I don't really have a good grasp on like what the average person's take on Abe is. So for example, like for me and like everybody that I interact with, for example, like we look at Abe and we're like, he's doing nothing. He's so lazy. He's such a crap prime minister. Like, get him out. But I don't know if there are actually people out there who like sympathize with him, and they're like, yeah, like poor Abe, he wants to help us, but like the constitution like isn't letting him help us. Like, I don't know how many people like that are actually out there, because I mean I follow like the Kante Instagram just to, I don't know, for at the beginning I was like, haha, it'd be so funny, but like the more I watch it, like the more kind of like depressing it gets. But whenever they do like a live, and they do lives often, it's just like it's all like hearts, like it's like nonstop hearts. And like when you look at the comments, and I mean like it's, I know it's like a filtered sample, but they're like, you know, like Abe sorry, like gokarada wo godaijin ni nasaimashite kudasai, or I don't know, like the Abe love is like very real.
A lot of those might be bots.
Oh yeah,
I know. True. On Twitter there are a lot of bots.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I also don't know how many people are sympathetic with him.
Yeah, but it kind of comes back to like, I was like, okay, so like if you want to keep taxing these people and like feeding yourself and your wife, like just make them stay home. Like, you can't tax dead people. Anyway.
Yes, so Japan's state of emergency is not a lockdown.
Yeah, it's not a lockdown. And it's very wishy-washy because it doesn't really exist to begin with.
There's tension between federal and prefectural governments.
Mostly because, yeah, like the prefectural governments are the ones that actually have, I guess, more enforcing power. So I heard we're not getting Wagyu beef coupons anymore. We're getting, yay, something better.
Yeah, oh my god. So, you know, before we even go into the welfare financial assistance packages, let us get into some of the other measures that the federal government has enacted. So one of them is, this is not enacted yet, but this is just suggested, is the Kanko Waribikiken, or the holiday vacation coupons, which will probably take place after all this is done. The thing about this, so this discount coupon is basically, it's like a discounted thing that you can use after this is over, when we can all travel. But when that will be, we have no idea, because this crisis is being handled very badly. So it doesn't really help to make policies for after the crisis, when we're still in the crisis.
Yeah, like people are starving now. Like, I don't care if I'm gonna go to onsen in October.
They came up with this policy like before the financial assistance to households and stuff, so people were like really mad.
Yeah, as they should be.
Yeah, rightfully so. And I think a little bit before that,
And this is just like to tie us over, right? Like, this isn't even like a real thing. They're just like, we're thinking of giving you free onsen trip, but like, we don't know yet.
Yeah, a lot of the language that's been used around this crisis in the media especially is like, everyone is thinking about doing something, mm-hmm. and everyone is planning,
yeah.
but no one is actually doing anything. Everyone is like, 考えてます, like, 検討してます, like.
That should be like the, what's the, you know the thing where they make like the word of the year? Like, 検討してます is gonna be this year.
流行語大賞.
So, 流行語大賞.
Anyway, the other thing that people were mad about is the 2 masks per household. We got some questions about this, but basically Prime Minister Abe has decided to send out 2 cloth masks. So not even regular masks, mm-hmm. but these like smaller masks made out of cloth. And he's going to send these to every household uh-huh. in Japan, which is going to cost 20 billion yen, which is about 18.4 million US dollars. So instead of paying people, he's going to use this money to send masks. And also, okay, so the thing with this is that this cloth mask is the one that Prime Minister Abe is always wearing. And some people have already gotten these masks delivered to them. I haven't.
Mm-hmm, me neither.
But anyway, some people who have received these masks on Twitter have been saying that the cloth mask is too small to cover both your mouth and your nose. So it's like pointless. If you look at him, it does look kind of small. Like,
And it doesn't cover your like cheeks or anything. So yeah, it's like a lot of gaps.
So I got a question about these masks that mm-hmm. was like, what was the rationale behind this? And I honestly cannot tell you the rationale yeah. behind like why, like the logistical reason for this plan.
Yeah.
But I think the only thing that he said was like, these masks are like reusable in that you can wash them because they're cloth masks.
Right.
But as for like why, I could not tell you.
The cloth masks are even deemed by the WHO to be not as effective as
mm-hmm.
the regular masks. Mm-hmm. So if you'd asked even one yeah. specialist.
And it says here, the News Postal 7 says that 75.9% of surveyed people, so almost 2,000 people, said that they will not use these masks. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame them.
Yeah, I don't blame them. And I think I've been seeing a lot on like my Twitter and like my Facebook, like all mm-hmm. these different like NPOs that work for like homeless people and stuff, like asking for the Abe no mask. If you're not going to use them, please send them to our homeless shelter mm-hmm. so we can give them to the homeless people. So
yeah, I mean, that's a better idea. I don't know why he didn't do that in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's some of the infuriating like things that have been implemented or suggested. But yeah. the main financial assistance package thing that was announced recently is this 30,000 yen per household. So mm-hmm. in US dollars, it's around $2,800. Again, the language around this is also very vague.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they purposely made it very confusing.
Yeah.
The first, like the day it was announced, it was like very, very confusing as to like who actually gets this money. But just to break it down, so it's 30 mon per household. Like, this is through the months of February through June of this year for anyone whose like income is affected. But there are qualifications that you have to mm-hmm. pass to get this money. And so there's 2 ways to qualify for this money. The first way you qualify is that if in any month between February to June, your monthly income decreases, but it doesn't decrease by more than 50% or half of your monthly income, and your monthly income decreases to the point of resident tax exemption level. So there's this thing called the resident tax exemption level, which is the level at which like you don't have to pay resident tax because you earn so little that you don't mm-hmm. even qualify. And this is the level on a regular basis where you qualify for welfare.
Yeah, like food stamp level
yeah.
poverty, yep. right?
So it's not a livable income.
Mm-hmm.
So the resident tax exemption level, if you go by monthly,
mm-hmm.
is For a one-person household, it's 10 man or 10 man, which is about $930 in US dollars. For a two-person household, it's 15 man, which is about 1,400 US dollars. For a three-person household, it's 20 man, 20 man, which is 1,900 US dollars around. And for a four-person household, it is around 25 man. Or 25 mon, which is around 2,400 US dollars. And for freelancers, excluding like necessary fees, the monthly income for this level is apparently sammaeng, so 3 mon, which is like less than $300.
Right. So like take home 3 mon?
Yeah. Yeah. And so the, yeah, so this level is very, very low.
Yeah.
And so unless your monthly income decreases to this point, you're not getting the 30 mon. So that's the first way you qualify. And the second way you qualify is if your income for any month between February to June decreases by more than 50%, then you look at the resident tax exemption level, but you double the number of the tax exemption level. The thing is with the losing more than half your income, the resident tax exemption level is doubled because you've already lost half your income for that month, which is like a lot of money. And so the numbers are more lenient because you've lost more than half or half of your income for that month. But it's still only double the resident tax exemption level. So it is still very, very low.
Right. I thought you had to... I thought it was both, but you just have to qualify for one way?
It's just one way.
Okay.
It's basically dividing it between people who've lost less than half and people who've lost more than half of their income. Let's say I was a one-person household who usually earns a monthly income of 20 mon. But for this month, my income was 11 man, 11 mon. So I've lost almost half of my income, but I haven't lost, I haven't lost more than half. So then what I would do is I would look at the first category of people who've lost less than half their income for a month. So then I look at the resident tax exemption level, and for one person household, that number is 10 mon. And even though I've lost almost half of my income, because I still earned 11 man, which is more than the resident tax exemption level for a one-person household, I would not qualify for this money, even though I've lost almost half my income for the month. Yeah,
but conversely, if you were a person who earned 30 mon and your quote-unquote new salary was 14 mon, which is less than half, you qualify for the 30 mon, even though you're making more than the person with 9 mon.
That's true.
So it's an imperfect system. It sucks. In order to be below the resident tax exemption level, you have to be earning less or working less than minimum wage full-time.
Yes. So again, this is not a livable income, especially in Tokyo.
Right.
And this, yeah, and this sanjuman, or this like resident tax exemption level is for the 23 wards of Tokyo. So it's not, yeah, if you're earning this little, it's not a livable income.
Yeah.
And you probably qualify for welfare on a regular basis. So if your income doesn't decrease to this level, you're not going to get this sanjuman.
Yeah.
But it's like people whose income decreases to this point already need help on a regular basis.
Like you definitely qualify. Like you can qualify for seikatsuhoko, which is kind of like the safety net of society.
Yeah, it's like social welfare. So the number of households that will get this is probably going to be very little. Yeah, so this system is very, very limited in terms of like how many households it can provide for. And it's estimated that only 20% of all households will receive this benefit. So that's very, very little. And another thing about this system is that it only, you only qualify for this if you're the setainishi or the head of household.
So like if you're, if the wife works part-time, but the husband's setainishi is still earning like the regular amount, then you don't qualify. Yeah, but it's like if you're, if your setainishi was sick from before and the wife was the one being the breadwinner,
if the wife's pay goes below it, then they can still qualify for the sanjiman. If you're like a multi-generation household, so like the ojiichan is the setainashi, and you all rely on like the son's like income, if the son's income decreases, it also, you also qualify.
So this is talking about cases where you rely on someone's income, but that someone is not the setainashi.
Yeah.
So this package still depends on whether you're the setainashi or not. And it assumes that someone or one person in the family is the breadwinner.
Yeah.
When some households in more recent times, like mm-hmm. both the parents are breadwinners and they live on like their combined income.
Mm-hmm.
So when the government first announced this system, it mm-hmm. was only that it was only based on the setainashi no income, the head of the household.
Yeah.
And what they suggested in the beginning is that if, for example, in your household, the setainashi, the head of household, loses their income, their money qualifies for the package. But if the person in the household who is not the setainashi, if their income decreases, but the head of household person's income does not decrease, then that household does not qualify for the package.
Mm-hmm. No.
So, mm-hmm. yeah. So the problem with that is it assumes that their combined income is coming from the setainashi, which usually, in many cases, is male.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually in a lot of households, men are the head of the household,
mm-hmm.
Legally.
Yeah.
And it assumes that they're the ones earning most of the money.
Mm-hmm.
When a lot of households in recent times, both the men and the women work, and the family relies on both their incomes to survive. So with this system, mm-hmm. if the person who is not the setainashi loses their income, then they only have like half or part of their income, annual income, to live by.
Yeah.
But because this the person who lost the money is not the setainashi or head of household, this household does not qualify yeah. for this package.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the problems with this package. But mm-hmm. yeah, so but the way that this system was created in the first place was it assumes gender norms, I guess.
Like women are seen as like the supporting role within family finances and within the office. Usually when you think of a mother working, you think of like a mother working part-time at a supermarket or some other temporary role that like supports the family budget. So maybe the mom pays for the children's like piano lessons or their cram school. But the more regular, bigger expenses are paid for by the husband. And similarly, like women are seen as kind of supporting roles in the Japanese economy as well. So if the economy is bad, then they fire all the irregular workers, temp workers, which tend to be women, because they're seen as having an alternative source of income, whether that be their family or their husband. So yeah, you can see this in this setainashi here. And whenever I like looked at the whole isetai, the 30 mon package, it's all done by family. Me is very puzzling. For example, in the US, like, I mean, there are glitches. For example, I don't get it, but basically most adults get $1,200 no matter how many people live at your address or are in your family.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be. Like, it should be on a person basis,
mm-hmm.
person-to-person basis. But in Japan, it's on a household basis.
Mm-hmm.
And the system assumes that only one person in your household earns most of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's based on gender norms, it assumes that women mostly, what they earn is not important enough mm-hmm. or significant enough to be considered part of the livable income or annual income. And mm-hmm. so that's why this system is very flawed.
Yeah. And I think on TV, to like regular Japanese mainstream TV, they're talking about how the whole lockdown and the way that these packages are created encourages like domestic violence and is kind of trapping victims of domestic violence in their homes. And we talked about this in our last episode too, but single mothers have been, I'd say, disproportionately impacted by the downturn, because usually it's very difficult for single mothers to live by themselves. And if the husband, I guess, usually, or their partner isn't being cooperative, they might not be able to file for divorce. So in those cases, their setainashi are most likely than not still their quote-unquote, I guess, like princess ex-husband, even though they're the only ones
paying for child support and so on. And it's not illegal to not pay child support in Japan. So yeah, it's very difficult for women.
That is that's the household package. There is a financial assistance package for small and medium businesses. And so corporations get up to 200 won,
mm-hmm.
and 個人事業者, so mm-hmm. private businesses, get up to 100 won or 100 won. And this is if they lose 50% or more than 50% in monthly earnings, which mm-hmm. is calculated from the same month in the previous year. So if from the previous year you've lost more than half your income, then you would get this package. But for this to work, you'd have to prove that you've lost half of your income, monthly mm-hmm. income, from the same month of the previous year.
Yeah.
So if, for example, if you just started your business,
mm-hmm.
you can't qualify for this because you didn't have a business last year. So you don't have any documents to prove that you've lost half of your money from mm-hmm. last year. So this is another problem with businesses that just opened. So yeah, that's the lack of financial assistance that Japan has mm-hmm. decided to implement. And there's also like the money issue is one thing, but there's also a logistical issue to this welfare package thing, because like everything is a self-declare system.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to like go to the desk to self-declare mm-hmm. that you've lost this amount of money if you qualify, because the system to self-declare isn't electronic. So you can't mm-hmm. do it online.
Yeah.
So you have to physically go into like the desk counters mm-hmm. to say that you've lost all this money.
Yeah.
Which is like counterproductive because it's like risky. It risks the spread of the virus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is like, as you can see in our explanation, it's very confusing to figure out who actually qualifies for this mm-hmm. package. And so that might stop a lot of people from actually applying, even though they might qualify.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, it might be difficult for them to gather the documents to prove that they've lost this money. So like for people like the elderly or disabled people mm-hmm. and like single parents, it might be harder for them to get the documents they need to prove that they lost this money mm-hmm. and that they qualify for the package. And also the process is very time consuming. So mm-hmm. the earliest businesses will receive the money is May, and the earliest households will receive this money is probably not until June. So, you know, what are they going to do for the next 2 months, you know? And this will probably like increase the workload for a lot of the staff workers that have mm-hmm. to deal with this in a time of extremely like limited resources.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of logistical problems to this package as well.
Yeah. And because mm-hmm. like it increases the workload so much for the bureaucratic people who are actually processing the documents, I've heard of cases, and they do this in other cases, for example, like unemployment too, but it's called like Mizugiwa Taisaku, which I guess roughly translates to like bayside or like near the water strategy, where, for example, if you're like a young person, I mean, you try to come in to qualify for maybe the 30 mon or for unemployment benefits, they actually tell you, like, you know, you're really young, like you can definitely go out and find work, like go out and find work first before, you know, you come back here and try to ask us for money. Yeah, so, and that's like actually illegal, but it has been like a strategy that some of these offices use. So I think for a lot of people, it takes a lot of like courage and pride to go and like even like ask for this kind of assistance, but then to be like humiliated in, you know, like an official setting like that by like a government worker is like embarrassing. And I think that's also scaring a lot of people away.
So that's the federal financial assistance mm-hmm. program. But as we saw with the state of emergency, because the federal response is like very slow and lacking, some of the smaller governments have decided to take things into their own hands. And so, for example, like some smaller cities in Chihō,
mm-hmm.
like Gotemba City in Shizuoka, mm-hmm. Shizuoka Prefecture, they actually planned a week before the federal government declared mm-hmm. a state of emergency to give 100 won or mm-hmm. 100 won, which is about $9,300 for about 200 shops affected With the closings such as bars and nightclubs. So they've actually planned before the federal government. And I think recently Fukuoka, the city of Fukuoka also announced that they're going to support the rent of businesses. So 80% of the rent of businesses up to 50 mon, which is around $4,600.
Right.
So some of the smaller governments are taking more drastic measures than the federal government.
Right.
Yeah. But do you want to explain the foreign workers thing?
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, as you guys have known from other episodes, I volunteer for a labor rights NPO. That's also like a labor union. So I've also been like manning the phones for people who come in or guess call in for consultations. And at least at my NPO, we've gotten about more than 100 consultations from foreigners and over 550 for Japanese people. Basically for foreigners who aren't Eju or Teju, which means like if you don't have a long-term visa to live in Japan like forever effectively, there are very little welfare packages that you can access. So the Japanese government, and they've expanded the, I guess, like qualifications for this with the coronavirus, but they originally have kind of a like a national loan system that's 0% interest that foreigners can also access. So you can borrow like a couple of $1,000 and you have like a year or two to pay it back and it's interest free. So that's a system that they can use, but it's not a grant, like you still have to pay it back. Another thing that they can use that's still accessible for foreigners with short time work is this thing called Jukyokakuho Fukuken, which is basically a rent securing package. And this one's a grant, but it only lasts for 3 months and up to six. And I think they're extending to 9, but I don't think that's like official yet. But basically they give you, sorry, to qualify for Juhokaku, so for the rent securing, you have to have lost your job. And you have to prove that you're struggling with rent. And in order to qualify for this, you have to prove that you have potential to find work within the next 3 to 6 months. So first of all, like, yeah, how do you prove that? And then also because a popular visa that a lot of foreigners are on is called Gijinkoku. So I think it's called like special skills, cultural skills, but basically like a lot of English teachers and those type like translators are on that visa. That visa only allows them to work in certain industries. So that really narrows down what kind of jobs are available to them. So even though, yes, they can qualify to apply for this type of grant, it's very difficult for them to get it. Yeah, so it's for foreigners, it's like a really tough time. And foreigners also tend to be one of the first people to be fired or laid off from jobs because they tend to be temp workers or part-time workers. And another thing that I've heard from like a different labor union, not my own, was talking about rosai or work-related injury compensation. So but basically people are wondering if you would qualify for rosai if you were to get coronavirus at work. And you know, this becomes a problem because a lot of people aren't able to telework. A lot of people still have to ride the trains. Short answer, yes, you can qualify for rosai if you can prove that you got coronavirus from your workplace.
Wow. How do you prove that?
So
unless someone else in your company has the virus.
Yeah. And it's, you know, people are still not getting tested. Like there's like a 96% or 98% rejection rate of testing. So yeah. So if you can prove that you got coronavirus from work, then yes, you can qualify, but chances are you probably can't. However, if you are interested in proving that you got coronavirus, you can do things like, you know, making sure you use your IC card when you go to work so you can show that you were riding the trains, that, you know, how long were you at work. You should also document your boss or your company, quote unquote, forcing you to go to work. So yeah, those are all like valuable evidence that can work in your favor. And that would work even if you are a foreign worker. So that is something to keep in mind.
Yeah, so for the financial assistance thing, the thing is that the government is telling everyone to stay home, stay home, stay home, stay home. But there are a lot of people who can't stay home unless they have money, right?
Yeah.
And the government doesn't want to pay us money, but they want us to stay home. But it can't work both ways. So, you know, if they don't give us money, people still have to go to work to earn the money to live. you know, people can't stay home if they don't have money. And yeah. So if they don't pay us, we can't stay home.
Like, when we're watching, like, Abe's, I don't know, I'm still not over Abe's, like, video. Like, when they're basically just like, I'm so sorry, like, we all can't go, like, drinking with our friends, and we can't go shopping, and just, like, I don't know, he's just, like, I don't know, this, like, aristocratic house, and just being like, I'm so sad that my wife can't go to her hanami parties anymore. And then people are just like, we don't care about the drinking parties, I just want to survive.
It's not that everyone is sad that they can't see their friends. Mm-hmm. It's everyone is dying because they don't have money. And our prime minister is sitting at home drinking tea and petting his dog while he's supposed to be planning the system so that everyone can get money, right? And we can link the video if you want to see it. Yeah. I don't want to see it anymore. Like, it was all over my timeline. Like, yeah. I'm tired. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, we'll link that video if you want to see it. But yeah, because the government is not paying money and a lot of part-time people are laid off, a lot of people who have been laid off are the 学生, students who in Tokyo, a lot of them are from Chiho or outside of Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And because they're not earning money anymore, they can't really pay for rent. And mm-hmm. so they have no choice but to go home, mm-hmm. go back to their hometowns, which is another risk of spreading the virus to other areas of Japan. Mm-hmm. All of the prefectures except for Iwate-ken have cases now. So Iwate prefecture is the only prefecture that does not have any confirmed cases. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the media is blaming young people for spreading the virus to their hometowns. Mm-hmm. But it's not, so first of all, it's not only the young people, because, you know, you can blame the young people all you want, but the federal government and, like, all the governments were the first people to be, like, not taking this virus seriously, mm-hmm. right? Until a few months ago, they were all set on having the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So their sense of emergency was not at all at the level that it needed to be at. Mm-hmm. And second of all, the students, a lot of them who have been laid off from their jobs and are not earning any money, have no choice but to go home because they can't pay their rent anymore. It's just easy to blame the young people, but they're also as much to blame.
It's like the virus doesn't suddenly get active at night. Like, it's happening everywhere. Like, it's at the office, it's at the call centers, it's on your packed trains.
It's not like it's only at bars and nightclubs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about the 医療崩壊. Last episode, you were talking about how the 保健所s are being overwhelmed, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you were saying the funding for the 保健所 had been cut.
Yeah.
Like, a lot, right? Yeah. And so I think that's a lot. That's doing a lot of harm right now or recently, because the numbers have been going up. The first place that people go to is, like, 保健所. And these 保健所, because the 保健所 right now is the place that does the testing.
Mm-hmm. Or I don't think, like, it's, like, the place, but, like, first they had to go get permission from the 保健所 to do tests.
So it has to go through the 保健所 because the testing right now is done publicly. It's not a private thing.
Yeah.
And so because the testing is done publicly, they have to, the hospitals who test have to go through the 保健所 to get permission to test, I think is what you were saying last time. And because the funding has been cut, the 保健所 right now are really overwhelmed because the numbers have been going up. And there's so much work for, like, these limited amount of workers and limited resources. And the 保健所 and I think, you know, Japan is not at the level of like Italy, like the health industry is collapsing, but we're already at the level of hospitals and medical professionals not having enough resources to provide for people because they're lacking in, like, medical equipment and, like, beds and stuff, which they should have been preparing, but they haven't. And so we're already at that point of not being able to prepare for more patients. And so I think the Medical Professionals mm-hmm. Association has like mm-hmm. declared like their own emergency being like, we will have a collapse of the healthcare industry if this continues. Another thing that needs to happen right now in Japan is that they have to separate the people who need testing from the people who are already infected and need treatment because a lot of the spreading actually is happening in hospitals. Mm-hmm. And so the people who, you know, who go get tested and think they have the virus are like getting the virus because they're at the same hospitals where there is already like patients, coronavirus patients.
Yeah.
So they have to separate the testing center from the actual hospital that mm-hmm. where they're going to be treated at, so this doesn't happen. But Japan hasn't done that yet, I don't think.
Yeah, or I think some hospitals have, because sometimes they'll have patients who are in very critical condition that, you know, whoever's in the ambulance with them thinks that they might have coronavirus, but then no hospitals let them in. So people, you know, these really sick people are just in ambulances for like, you know, minutes or hours at a time, not being able to be admitted. So even though I thought that they were having some kind of plan where they were going to put all the like non-corona patients in like apahoteru, obviously like that hasn't, it's not enough, or they haven't done it already. Yeah, so they need to create like a separate hospital like they did with like the warship in the US, or like create that whole new hospital like they did in Wuhan. Yeah, the number of people that, you know, are probably going to get sick are really, really high.
Yes, they keep rising. So thanks for making it all the way through this long episode. Just to give you some updates, it is now April 16th, one day after we recorded. So after a lot of criticism, the Prime Minister has declared a state of emergency for the whole nation. So this is a national state of emergency now. And also, it looks like there are movements in the federal government to scrap the 30 mon and instead distribute 10 mon for every individual. Whether those individuals will include foreigners who do not have citizenship or residency is still not clear. So we'll see, and we'll keep you updated.
And special thanks to our two musicians, Stone Stewart and Taro Hyodo, for doing our break music and our intro music.
Thank you also to Taro for additional research on this episode.